So what should our priorities be when looking for a shidduch? What are the most important things to keep in mind when we look for somebody that we want to commit ourselves to and who we want to spend many future experiences of our lives together with? What are the most important values that we all need to consider? And that is something that Parshas Chayisara gives us the opportunity to think about. As we know, in Parshas Chayisara, we have Avraham Avinu entrusts his servant Eliezer to go and find an appropriate match for Yitzchak. Now, what's very interesting is, just a couple of weeks ago, Rav Shlomo Amar was with us for Shabbos, and he pointed out something very fascinating. In Sfardische Kehilos, in Sfardi communities, they have a minhag, they have a custom that on Shabbos, when a chassan gets married, either right before or right after he gets married, it's called the Shabbat Chatan. So we have an ofra before, they do it the Shabbos after. So the chassan gets an aliyah. And when he comes up for his aliyah, before they read from the Sefer Torah, they actually take out a sitter and they read from Parshas Chayisara all about the story of Eliezer being sent to find an appropriate match for Yitzchak. And they go through the whole story and they read it. So Rav Amar pointed out there were old communities in Tunisia, he said, where they actually took out a second Sefer Torah on those Shabbosos and they read through it from a Sefer Torah itself. And that was a special significance that was given to the Shabbos when somebody was getting married. Now, obviously, it's a very beautiful story. It's very nice when we're recounting the story of Yitzchak getting married and Eliezer being sent. But is there something more significant about it than that? There are a number of stories in Chumash where we talk about somebody who gets married. Why do we choose this one? And what he suggested was the following. And I think even though for us, many in the room who are Ashkenazim, we do not have this custom. We don't read this story, but we do read it every year in Chumash. And it is a story that we're familiar with. So the message is valuable and relevant regardless of whether or not we read it at the time when we get married. And he points out that perhaps the understanding is as follows. It's interesting when you look in the Psukim, when they describe in this week's Parsha about Eliezer being sent to go find the wife. So we're told that Eliezer is the Moshel B'chol Asher Lo, that Eliezer is the one who is in charge of everything that Avraham Avinu owns. He is the one who is entrusted with all of his business enterprises, with everything that Avraham Avinu is involved with. And that introduction is given as Eliezer is being sent out to go do his mission. Why does that have relevance to the fact that he's now going to find a wife for Yitzchak? Why does the Torah now begin to tell us how much Avraham Avinu trusted him and how much he was involved in the business affairs and in all of the goings-on in the house of Avraham Avinu? Why was that relevant to the story? And aside from that, Avraham Avinu, think about it in this perspective. If in fact Avraham Avinu trusts him for everything, and he's in charge of all the investment portfolios, and he has the private information for everything in Avraham Avinu's life, then why are you being so skeptical of him now? Now he's going to find a wife for Yitzchak. Take it a step further. He not only doesn't trust him, he makes him make a shvua. In Shulchan Aruch, they talk about the various levels and degrees of a shvua, of taking an oath upon oneself, and all the different kinds of variations of that. So in Shulchan Aruch, it says that the most extreme shvua that one can ever be expected to make is the one that Avraham Avinu made Eliezer take, benikitas chefetz. Whatever, it's not important, all the details, but he goes to the extreme. It's not just that he doesn't trust him, it's he makes him make a shvua. Not just he makes him make a shvua, he makes him go to the extreme and take the most powerful shvua that one can ever make to obligate himself. What is your concern? And beyond that, how old is Yitzchak Avinu at the time? He's an adult. He's not a child. Yitzchak Avinu is somebody who knows how to make his own decisions at this point. So what are you so concerned of? Let's say Eliezer goes and he comes back with a woman who's not appropriate for Yitzchak. Yitzchak will go on a date, he'll meet her, and he'll say, hey, this is not for me. So obviously Eliezer made a mistake, and I'm mature and old enough for myself to know what the priorities should be, what's the right kind of personality. Obviously this is not for him. So what are you concerned about? What's going to happen? What was the concern? Why go to the extreme? Rav Amar suggested that what we need to realize when we go through the story of Yitzchak and his marriage is that in life we trust people for all kinds of things. But we have different levels of trust depending on how important the item at hand is for us. So when you think about going into a business venture, you ask your friend in shul, you see your friend in school, And you say to them, so what do you think about this investment? And they say to you, I don't know. I heard some shady things about that person. I don't think you should be involved. Well, you say, they don't really know what they're talking about. Let me just move on. It's fine. It's not the way it works. With an investment, we'll do research and we'll research again. And we'll turn over every stone to make sure that the person we're about to engage in a business deal with is someone that's upstanding, that's reasonable, that's understandable, that's somebody that I can actually engage with in whatever it's going to be moving forward. So how do we engage when we're trying to figure out a decision with regard to the chinuch of our children? What do we do? How much are we willing to trust people? Is it at least the amount that we would do research when it comes to a business deal with an investment? Is it at least that much? So he pointed out, you can have Eliezer, who is trusted by Avraham Avinu for everything. But Avraham Avinu says, my priority in life is not my money. I trust Eliezer. He's trustworthy enough when it comes to my money. He can have all of the secret information, all in the investment accounts, I trust him. When it comes to the chinuch of my children, I take no chances. I don't care how much I trust him with everything else. I don't care how involved he is with every other aspect of my life. But when it comes to my children, I take no chances. And we need to realize, he said, that the most important thing in our lives when raising a family is the chinuch of our children. And we need to take that responsibility seriously. And Avraham Avinu teaches us just that. That responsibility is something that he took very seriously. And that he would not trust even Eliezer, who he trusted for everything else. And he not only didn't trust him, he made him make a shvua. And not just a shvua, he made him make the ultimate shvua. And even though Yitzchak was already an adult and could have made a decision on his own, Avraham Avinu said, I'm just not taking any chances. Because when it comes to the chinuch of our children, that is the most important thing that we need to invest all of our energy, all of our attention, and all of our efforts toward. So now that we have that background, we get into the story of Yitzchak and Rivka, and we try to figure out what we can learn from that story. I'm just going to give a little bit of a brief introduction, and then we're going to get in. When you get to the second side of the page, we're going to see a fascinating insight on this week's parsha that I think really frames what it is that should be the important values that we look for as we all work on this endeavor to try to find the right match, to try to find the right person who may be appropriate for us. So the Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yeshar, the Ramchal was one of the most important Jewish philosophers of all times, and he wrote one of the most significant svarim on Inyani Hashkafa called Mesilas Yesharim. The Ramchal lived in the 1700s. Anybody know how old the Ramchal was when he passed away? He was born in 1707. Passes away in 1746. So how old is he? In higher mathematics, 1707 to 1746? 39. Amazing. I feel like so uncomfortable when I say that. I'm a few years shy of 39. What have I done? What do I have to show for myself? Look at the Ramchal. Hundreds of years later, the impact and the impression that he has left on the Jewish people. 39 years old. So writes the Ramchal. In the very beginning, in the Hakdama to the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, he says, "Achibar azeh lo chibartiv lelama lebnei adam eis asher yadu." I did not write the Mesilas Yesharim to teach people information that they already know. Rather, says the Mesilas Yesharim, "I did this lahaskiram es hayadu lahem kvar." I did this simply as a reminder to teach people what they do already know. Umefursam etzlam pirsam gadol, to talk about issues and themes that are very obvious, that are very well known. For the most part, he says, everything you will find in the Sefer are issues that all of us are aware of, and we don't have any doubt. Because they are so well known, and since they are so obvious and absolute, people sometimes forget the most obvious and basic fundamental points of their life. They don't focus on them. And therefore the Ramchal writes that he thinks his goal in the Sefer is to just remind us of the most valuable principles and the most important lessons that we all need to be aware of, that we are aware of, but that maybe are in the subconscious somewhere and we're not focusing on them enough. It's the same in relationships. When we have our parents who are just so fundamental and basic to what our lives are, We don't appreciate them, and we don't really fully value and understand what they bring into our lives. It's not until, God forbid, somebody's parent gets sick, and then you start to reflect and you say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Everything that I took for granted, everything that I thought was so obvious about the relationship with that parent, maybe is not as obvious as I may have once expected. So that's the same over here. Vitira, and he says, and you will see, he makes a sociological observation. Im tisbonin behove berov ha'ulam. If you look around the world and you study people, ki rov anshei ha'seichel ha'mahir v'ha'pikchim ha'charifim, most of the well-educated, learned, cultured people, the sharp minds, yasimu rov hisbonanam v'histaklusam bedakos ha'chachmos ve'omek ha'iyunim. Most of their thoughts will be spent on trying to understand the nuances of life, trying to understand the depth of all that they encounter. Scientists and mathematicians and engineers, people who are trying to get to the bottom of what it is that science represents, what it is that the world is all about, how things run. Each person based on their particular understanding or interest. There are some people, there are some people who have a deep appreciation for science. There are others who have a great appreciation for architecture and craft and the like. There are some people who give over their lives to focus on Torah itself. Ach, next paragraph. Ma'atim yu min amin hazeh. Seldom do we find a person. Seldom do we find a person who sets aside time to focus on perfecting their service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Al ha'ava, al ha'yira, what does avas Hashem mean? Character improvement, development, enriching my life, modifying my behavior. Al ha'dvekas v'al kol shar chelke ha'chassidus. V'lo m'pnei she'ein dvarim eila ikarim etzlam. It's not because these are not important to them. Kim tishalem, if you would ask them, kol echad yomar shezehu ikar gadol, they would all say, no, this is of paramount importance to living a life as a Jew. Ach ma shelo yirbu la'ayin alav hu m'pnei rov pirsum ha'dvarim upshitusam etzlam. But because this is so axiomatic to the life of a Jew, that is why we don't think about it. Shelo yire lehem tzarech lehotzi biyunam zman rav. I always find it fascinating when you have an encounter with a baal or baalas tshuva, and they're looking at a sitter for the first time, or they're observing Shabbos for the very first time, and they start asking questions. And as somebody who may have grown up in a religious home, you don't know the answer to those questions because they never bothered you. It's not that the question isn't a good one. It's a very good one. But Shabbos is so much taken for granted in my life that, hey, I never wondered, why do we sing Shalom Aleichem on Friday night? And why do we light candles right before Shabbos starts if the lights are on? And why do we make Kiddush at the beginning of the meal? And why do we have two rolls? And all of those questions are ones which are so basic to all of us, but we may not ever think about them because it's just so much a part of the fabric of life that we experience. And the same thing over here. You know, I think about it a lot. I have young children, and when I start to study with them, and you start reading Chumash with them, and they have such basic questions that you could read the Pasuk 100 times, you would never think of this question. But a child who's inquisitive, who's just beginning, who's putting milim and shereshim together and learning the principles of how words work and how the Hebrew language works, sometimes has very compelling questions like, why is this word spelled like this? Why is there an extra above there? Why is there a yud missing over here? Why is there a hey at the end of the word, beginning of the word? And these are things that maybe we don't think about. But says the Mesilas Yesharim, sometimes there are aspects of life that we need to think about and that are so obvious to us, but we need to take a step back. Now, the way I think about the next passage we're going to read in the Rambam is, I don't know how many of you have ever encountered somebody who is very, very sick. If you've had that experience, you'll appreciate what the Rambam says. So the Rambam writes, there are people who have choli haguf. There are people who are very sick and present symptoms. I think about it every year when I go to Camp Simcha for 2 weeks in the summer. And I'm there with hundreds of kids who are so sick, many of them on active chemo or other kinds of debilitating illnesses, varying degrees, and they have so many chemical imbalances inside of their bodies. And we don't have an appreciation for how many things have to work properly in a body for everything to be the way we want it to be, for everything to be normal, as we would say. And you look at somebody, I remember I had a friend who was going through chemo, and I asked him, how are you doing? He says, well, my numbers are up, my this is down, my cholesterol, and it's impacting, I mean, I'm making it up, I don't remember exactly what he said, but it's impacting my liver, and it's, you can tell me, you're a scientist, right? My this is impacting that, and this is imbalanced, and that's off. And I said, like, how did all that happen? He's like, oh, no, this is fine. This is just a normal day. This is the way it goes when you're going through chemo. Like, everything's just out of whack, and your whole body's just trying to get used to the whole scenario, the whole situation that's going on. That's called choli aguf. A person who's sick, there's so much imbalance in the body, and you have to carefully measure exactly what kind of intervention you're going to give them, how you're going to try to fix them, how you're going to try to heal the problem that they have. Says the Rambam, choli aguf tomim hamar masok umasok mar. Sometimes a person who is sick has an imbalance where what the rest of us would think is sweet, they think is sour. They're unable to appreciate some of the joys and pleasures that we have. V'yesh ben acholim, there are some who are sick. Shemis ave v'ta'ev l'machalo she'en eruyin la'achila kegon ha'afar v'apecha. There are some who want to eat things. They have a craving for things that are not edible, that are disgusting, that are putrid. V'sonei ha'machalos ha'tovim kegon ha'pas v'abasar, and they reject conventional foods. They'll only eat candy. That's not a healthy way to live life. Hakol lefi rov acholi, it depends very much on the stage of the illness that the person is in. Kach v'nei ha'adam, says the Rambam, so too there are people. Shenafshoseim cholos. There are people whose bodies are not sick, but whose souls are contaminated, whose souls are infected. Misavim ve'oavim hadeos haros. They are attracted and they are excited by things that most other people would be repulsed by. You would say, that's not edible. That's not part of my diet. That's not part of my life. But that's called choli hanefesh. V'sonim haderech hatova. U'mis'atzlim lalechas ba'vihi kaveita aleim lema'od lefi chelya. Says the Rambam, there's choli aguf and choli hanefesh. There are people who are sick physically, and there are other people who are sick in other ways, that they're just so off. They have no understanding of what kind of life a neshama, a nefesh, is supposed to live. And it throws everything out of whack. And when I read this Rambam, I was struck with the following thought. There's one major difference between choli haguf and choli hanefesh. When you have choli haguf, when somebody is physically sick, there are symptoms that present themselves that allow the person to appreciate or understand that I now have an indication that there's something wrong. I just got off the train today. You know, Manhattan is so fascinating. I'm sure this happens to you. Things just like happen. So I stepped off the train, I get out of the building, there's cops all over the place. They said, do you speak German? I'm like, no, I don't speak German. Do I look like I speak German? I mean, I don't know what that person's supposed to look like. So then I said, well, like Yiddish, German, like a little bit, maybe. I'm like, I don't really speak German, I don't speak Yiddish, but like maybe, I don't know, I have no idea. I said, well, how can I help you? They said, oh, well, come over here. So that's why I came late to the first class. I walked over to the side. There were two guys who were on drugs, clearly, who were vomiting all over the street and who were literally looked like they were about to die. They were having convulsions. They were white in the face. They were like passing out. It was crazy. So the police were there trying to communicate with them to find out what did you have. And I'm like, why are you asking them what they had? Before you do that, why don't you call an ambulance? So I called 911. I'm like, I'm here with the police. There are people on the street. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, we started having a whole discussion with them and whatever. Somebody else got on the phone translating. But when you have a choli haguf, the symptoms present themselves. And very often, you have the opportunity to deal with it. So if somebody has a growth, you know that that growth is indicative of something. And then you have the opportunity to fight it, or to deal with it, or to have some kind of surgery to get rid of it. The problem with choli hanefesh is, a person could go an entire experience of life and be totally oblivious and unaware of the fact that they have something wrong in their personality. A person can go through all of life, and unless somebody points it out to you, there is no symptom. There's no indication. It takes a tremendous amount of self-awareness for a person to realize, I have a problem. And it's not a physical problem. It's an emotional problem. It's a spiritual struggle. It's something wrong in my nefesh, not in my guf, yeah?
What if you were born with your illness?
Which, a physical illness, you mean?
Yeah.
What
are
about?
Are you saying that, like, your issue manifests physically, or are you purely talking about, like, mental illnesses?
No, no, no. I'm not talking about mental or physical. I'm saying there's a contrast between someone who has a physical illness and somebody who has what's called a choli hanefesh, which means a bad character trait.
Oh, so
right?
You're comparing.
So if I'm living my whole life and I have a character trait of being very easily angered, and I don't know how to use anger management properly, if nobody ever points it out to me, I think that this is normal. I think that this is appropriate behavior, and I'll never change. Because there is no indication that says, you are sick. You're terrible to be around because nobody wants to interact with you. So that is why there's a major difference. So let's see, in the Chovos HaLevavos, which is also a very, very old sefer. So he writes, in the Shaar Avodas Elokim, he says as follows. Look at the bottom. Amar HaSeichel. The whole sefer is very interesting. It's like a discussion between the brain, between the intellect and the heart. And it's back and forth, a conversation between the two of them. Amar HaSeichel. So it's an imaginative conversation. Didn't really actually happen. But the Seichel says, Hamidos HaMaguno Shebecha Rabos. The Seichel says, look, I'm self-reflecting. I'm looking inside of myself. I'm reviewing my whole life, and I see that there are many negative or corrupt character traits that I have. They all stem, they all break down to two general categories. One of them is my need for physical pleasure and satisfaction, that I want gratification. The second one is arrogance and hubris, and argues the Chovos HaLevavos that every negative character trait that we can have or that we can experience boil down to these two general categories. Either it's something that is connected to my need for physical satisfaction or for physical indulgence or gratification, or it comes down to my own need for being recognized, for feeling a sense of arrogance. Right? You ask yourself, why would an abuser abuse someone? I'm not a psychologist, I don't know. But just in layman's terms. So you can say either because they need gratification, they need physical gratification, and they have no other way to get it, so this is what they're going to do. Or number two is, they need to feel a sense of arrogance. They need to feel, I'm above somebody else, so I'm going to take advantage of them and show them how lowly they are and how wonderful I am and how powerful I am. Says the Chovos HaLevavos, if you think about every negative character trait, that's what it can boil down to. Every negative thing a person can do. Amar HaNefesh. So the Nefesh responds, that Yiksha alai dehipard mimenu mipnei orech regiluso bi. While I look inside of myself and I see that there are many aspects of my life that I would love to change.
I'm so sorry. I'm not in this class. Someone borrowed my charger.
I have no idea.
Mipnei
orech regiluso bo. It's very hard for me to distance myself from these character traits because this is part of who I am. And this is what we say all the time. And this is actually a big discussion in the Baalei Machshava today. There's a school of thought in psychologists who say, you know, everything is innate. And if I have this kind of tendency, so what do you want from me? Right? If I have this kind of tendency, so it's not my problem, what should I do? While that's true, the halacha does have a category for a person like that. Right? Would anybody say, you can't blame an abuser because he was born like that. He has a tendency to go and abuse to go and abuse children, to be a pedophile. No, we don't say that. Why do we not say that? Why do we not say that? Because as much as you may have a predisposition to that, your job is to fight it as a human being. If you don't have the ability to fight it because you're so crazed by this, there's a category in halacha for you. That's called a shote. And you would not be held responsible if you actually were born with such a craze that you could not contain. Right? So here, the Chovos HaLevavos writes that when I have a negative character trait, I say to myself, it's so hard. So he pleads with the mind and he says, tell me, how can I deal with a negative character trait and actually overcome it? Amar HaSeichel, the Seichel responds, Halo yadata ki hamaskil, Yikach be'enav lichros netach echa minesachav velifkod ever echa me'evarv kishiirlo bocholi. Umefached me his pashtuso b'shari varab. He says, if you have a person who has a physical ailment and they're afraid that cancer is going to grow to a different area of their body, what will they do? They have to have an immediate surgery, even if it means they're going to lose use of their arm or their leg or their eye or whatever it may be. But they understand, if I don't do this, then I'm going to have nothing. So he says, "Kishu maven mashiyesh ben shneha inyanim umakir mashiyesh ben shteha rose v'chein ata." And so to you, imtirzi shetakol beinecha predas mashe piradato kasha. If you know that you have a negative character trait, and it's true, it's like ripping off it's like doing a surgery to dissect something, not dissect, to remove something from a body, and that's painful. And it's hard, and it's a lot of work. However, look at it in the overall perspective. Would you rather have this negative trait and allow it to be pervasive in every aspect of your life and destroy all of your relationships and destroy every experience of having meaningful life? Or would you rather get down and do the hard work and look inside of yourself and figure out, how can I uproot this horrible midah ra that I have? And that's what he suggests. Asher tagia elecha behiparetcha mimenu v'hara'a asher timtso oscha behasmadascha chaveraso v'az yikol be'inecha predas mashayiksha elecha mimidosecha amagunos. That is the way to get rid of a negative character trait, to look at it in those terms and to understand that if I don't get rid of this, it can negatively impact my entire life. So the Chafetz Chaim writes, working on ourselves is certainly a difficult task. Says the Chofetz Chaim, enhancing and enriching our lives is something that will be the outcome of working hard and trying to fix things that may be negative about who we are. But it will make us all more happy, make us all more fulfilled and more productive people. Writes the Chofetz Chaim, V'chein efligu asvar makadoshim b'shem ha'arizal, v'chein memishle shel agra, v'kama mekomas b'chiyuv limud sifrei musar b'chol yom. And therefore, says the Chofetz Chaim, this is why it's so important to learn Musar, to set aside time for self-introspection. When we have so many contrarians in our community, you look online and you can find a theory for anything, and no one's held responsible or accountable for anything negative. Therefore, he says, we need to make sure that we work on perfecting ourselves. If you don't learn Musar, you're going to collapse. There's no way to survive. Someone who's traveling, and there is a tremendous wind, a hurricane. If you don't hold on to your clothing, you're going to be naked. You're going to have nothing left because everything's going to blow off. Everything's going to blow away. Kein adavar bin yonenu, so too, when it comes to our lives. Ka'es, he says, shoresh ruach sa'ara, shokfiro minas ba'olam. When we have a hurricane in the world of incompatible values to the kinds of lives that we're living, im lo yischazek ha'adam alimin ha'musar, if we do not strengthen ourselves to try and work on this aspect of our lives, shehu ha'lavush ha'magin al taraso. This is the cloak, this is the clothing of every human being. Azai alul hu'lios nerdav achare haruach. Why am I saying all of this? Because that leads us into the next point. Avraham Avinu, as we read in the Parsha last week, 2 weeks ago also, engages with Paro, engages with Avimelech. And when he comes to the story of Avimelech, he responds immediately, not knowing what's going on. He says, "Rak ein yiras Elokim b'makam hazeh." Avraham Avinu travels with his wife to Avimelech, Melech Plishtim. He looks around, he surveys what's going on, and he says, "All I can tell you is, Ein Yiras Elokim b'makam hazeh. There's no Yiras Shamayim in this place." What does that mean? There's no Yiras Shamayim? Says Rashi, Minayin hayayodeya Avram. How did Avram Avinu know that there was no Yiras Shamayim there? Rashi explains, because it makes sense that when a guest comes to town, the first thing that you ask him is, do you have a place to stay? Do you have something to eat? Are you taken care of? When was the last time you had a warm meal? Do you want to go to the gas station? Do you want to get something to eat or drink? These are normal questions that we ask. And here, in this situation, the first question they asked him is, oh, who's this woman that's with you? Who's this woman? Can we take her? Avraham Avinu says, that's an indication that there's no Yiras Shamayim in this community. So the altar from Kelem had a question, and he says, look, somebody who's not so hospitable, somebody who's a little bit hostile to a guest, is somebody who's just simply not hospitable. Why do you say that that person has no Yirah Shamayim? You're just not being nice to me. Why does that mean you don't have Yirah Shamayim? And the Alter said, because it's clear that somebody who is deficient in the way that they interact with other people, somebody who doesn't understand how there's supposed to be appropriate conversation between a guest in town and themselves, means they have no Yirah Shamayim. It means you're very detached from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. It means you don't understand what a life living with the Ribono Shel Olam is all about. And in that vein, I'd like to then go on to the next point here, which I think is extremely important when it comes to Shidduchim. Rabbi Elie Lapian points out something which is so obvious, and it's something that maybe you've read the story so many times about Eliezer and Avraham Avinu, but maybe you've never actually thought about this point, which again is so glaringly obvious. So Rabbi Elie Lapian writes the following. What happened? Eliezer is sent by his father to go find the shidduch. I'm sorry, he's sent by Avraham Avinu to find the shidduch for Yitzchak. What were the instructions? Only take from this community, not from that community. Okay, what was so wonderful about this community? And what was so bad about the other community? Let's back up a step. Who were the family members of Rivka? Nothing to write home about, right? So Avraham Avinu, I don't understand. What were your instructions? He should go to this community and find a wonderful woman there, because they're much better than they are in the other town. Well, what exactly is going on in the town where you sent him to? You have Lavan and Besuel and all these corrupt, horrific, horrible people. That's fine. How do you explain that? Right, Rabbi Elie Lapian, Hinei, Kishahalach Eliezer Lekaim Shlichuso. When Eliezer went to go and faithfully do his job, Hayanirash V'Nivchad, he's terrified, he's anxious, he's concerned. And he offers a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sheyazmin lo haru'i liYitzchak, that the Ribono Shel Olam should do some kind of miracle to show him who is the right person for Yitzchak. And he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me a sign. What was the sign? The sign was, whoever's going to come and help out to give water, that's the woman who I know is really for Yitzchak. Ksharosh and his kabla tefillasa, when he sees that the Ribono Shel Olam answered his tefillah. Hinehi Rivka yotzes lishav mayim, vayikod ha'ish vayishtachu la'Hashem, upela gadol yesh lehispale. It's a beautiful story and we've all heard it. He has his prayers answered and a woman comes and helps him with all the water and doesn't only take care of him, takes care of the animals. What an amazing woman. But take a step back and ask yourselves. Ki afim rab amidos neflo shal gemidos chasadam derech eretz uz rizos. And he sees that she's generous and she's compassionate and she has such a sensitive side to her. Not only for people, but even for animals. How do you bring someone home for Yitzchak who you don't even know if she believes in God? You know nothing about her background. So she's very nice. What about the fact that she didn't go to a Jewish day school? That she's totally uneducated in Jewish law? That she knows nothing about who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. You're coming from the home of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu successfully set up a Kiruv institution. He had thousands of people, the Rambam says, Alafim Uravavas Me Yisrael. He had tens of thousands of people who came along with him for this journey. You're going to bring home a woman who doesn't subscribe to any of that? So why did Eliezer say, I want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send me a sign. Make sure that this woman is going to be kind and compassionate and sensitive. And how am I going to see it? When I go out to the well, let's see if she's going to help me. And his prayers were answered. And he's all excited. You still don't know the most important thing about her. You still don't know whether this woman is actually frum. You don't know whether this woman believes in God. That wasn't on the prerequisites of Avraham Avinu. V'achein. Gam lo bikesh simen al ze klal hayitachen. Why didn't he ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a simen, whether or not he's going to find a girl who has Yirah Shamayim? Uma yorlim hi balas midas tovas v'chas v'shalom shema yira shamayim einla. Halo hi bas besuo v'achos lavan ha'arami. V'shema hi ovedas gilulim. Maybe she's somebody who serves avodah zarah. Kamo kol mishpachta v'anshe eretz maladata. Ha'im zu hi ha'isha ha'ru'uya li'yitzchak avino livnos es beis Yisrael atmaha. Is this the woman that should be designated to marry Yitzchak Avinu and to be the foundation of the entire Jewish people? Does that make sense? How can this be understood? And why would Avraham Avinu send them to a place where they're all of the Avodah Zarah? Mikol zeh lamadnu yisod gadol v'chiddush nifla. We learn from this, and I believe this can be found in the Drashas Haran. I just couldn't find it this morning before I left, but I think I once saw it there. V'chiddush nifla. Asher lav kol mochel savil da, which means not every brain can appreciate this chiddush. Aval kein hu emes, but this is the truth. She'af ki yira hi ha'ikar be'avodas ha'adam, although yira shamayim is the most important thing. Sof tavar akol nishmas alokim yira ves mitzvosav shemar ki zeh kol ha'adam. The Navi tells us, the most fundamental aspect of life is Yira Shamayim. And of course, it's so integral to what it means to be a Jew. Mikal makom yesh lanu leida. We need to know, says Rabbi Lapian, ki adam sheyesh bo adinas hanefesh umidas tova. Somebody who has a compassionate side. Somebody who has a sense of understanding of people. Af ki omed b'matzav sheadayin lo kana ha'yira. If that person has no Yira Shamayim at all, it's better, says the Drashas Haran, if you have two options of who to marry. Option one is somebody with powerful midos, but a great learner. Somebody who's very tuned into learning Torah. Option B is somebody who has tremendous Yira Shamayim. I'm sorry, other way. Option B is the other way. Which one would you choose? I'll take the Ovid Avodah Zarah. I'll take the kind, compassionate, sensitive, and understanding person who has no Yira Shamayim. Why? Because I firmly believe that if I set them up in the right place and I'm going to bring up my family in the right location with the right neighbors and friends, they will be influenced. Yira Shamayim will come. It is much easier, he says, to infuse a person with Yira Shamayim than it is to teach a person how to change terrible character traits that they have. And he says, "Ki mi sheyesh bo midos tovos, yesh bo hayisod livnos es atzmo." Somebody who has positive character traits is a person who then has the ability to grow in all areas of life. Ula hagia lachala madregos hayoser nalos. Ma she'en ken amushchos b'midos. Somebody who really does not have a proper way in which they interact with other people. Chol rohi va'ayuma, asher me'atim eod zachol lehichalitz odehirape mimenu. It's very hard to change a character trait. Kol zman she'amidus haros sholtos ba'adam, kol yigiyasa ba'avodas Hashem yizbarach lareiki. Everything I do for the Ribbono Shel Olam is insignificant and ineffective. It has no value. There's a fascinating conversation in the beginning of Maseches. I'm sorry, in the middle of Maseches Shabbos. Shabbos Daf Pei Tes, the Gemara talks about Moshe Rabbeinu when he went up to Har Sinai and he's negotiating to get the Torah, and it says that he gets in a whole disagreement with the Malachim. They say, Ma Yiludisha Beinenu, what is this human being doing here? The Torah is for the Malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's not for you, it is for you. Back and forth. Moshe Rabbeinu in the end is victorious, comes down with the Torah, gives it to the Jewish people. Okay. But the Gemara says, do you know what was the first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught him when he came up to Har Sinai? What was the first thing the Ribbono Shel Olam taught him? Anybody know? So you think he started with the beginning of Torah. Bereishis bara Elokim. I don't know. What did he teach him first? No, there was something that came before that. The Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu shows up on Har Sinai. Kodesh Baruch Hu turns to him and he says, Ein Shalom bi'ircha? I don't understand. When you bump into somebody, when you see somebody that you haven't seen in a long time, you don't say Shalom Aleichem? You have no manners? So I invited you to come up to heaven. You just got here. the first thing you should say is, "Hi, God, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. How you doing?" Have a conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Be cordial, be nice. Ein Shalom Be'ircha, it's not the way they do things down below. Moshe Rabbeinu turns back and he says, "Hey, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I appreciate your comment. However, Klum Yesh Eved Shenosin Shalom L'Rabo, I'm terrified to be here. I'm scared of being in your presence. Is this the way that I will introduce myself when I get here? I'm lucky enough to be a fly on the wall. I'm not going to come straight to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, 'Hey, God, how are you doing today? What are we up to? What are we here for?' I'm going to sit in my place. I'll do what I'm supposed to. And when you call upon me, I'll come out. I'll talk." Klumish Eved Shanosin Shalom L'Rabo. You ever look at those soldiers in Buckingham Palace or the National Guard in the White House in Washington? They don't say a word. They're not asked to say a word. And it would be inappropriate for them to say a word. I didn't ask you. Don't get involved. So the queen is having her dinner here, the dinner there. It's not your business. What are you asking questions? It's none of your business. The president decided he's going to have a meeting in this room or the other room. Your job is to be there. Your job is not to say a word. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "My job is just to be here. My job is not to ask questions, not to say hello, not to get involved. I was asked to be here. I'm honored and privileged enough that I was invited. And for me, that's where it starts and ends." HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches Moshe Rabbeinu before any of the Torah. The first lesson that he imparts to him is, you need to deal with people with derech eretz. You come to my house, you come to where I, Kabayachal, live, first thing you do is, you act with derech eretz. You say, Shalom Alecha. You say that you're honored to be here. Torah is secondary, but this is really the first thing that we need to think about. And Rav Shach writes in one of his Sfarim, that this is what it means when we say Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. That it actually was the case. The first thing Moshe Rabbeinu was taught was not Torah. The first thing Moshe Rabbeinu was taught was Derech Eretz. Human decency. How is a human being supposed to behave? What should a person do? And that really is so much of what's important and what we learn from the story in this week's Parsha by Eliezer going to choose a wife for Yitzhak Avinu. While there were so many different qualities that he could have looked for, I would have said, you're looking for the wife of the Gadol HaDor, I would say the most important value you need to have is somebody who's going to be in line with the understanding, with the philosophy of Avraham Avinu. Somebody who's going to be in line with what it means to be Makir Es Boro. Somebody who's going to understand what it means to follow in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and no one in the world is doing that. Avraham Avinu was Me'ever HaSheni. He was Avraham HaIvri. He was living on the other side of the world because he did not agree with the philosophy, with the mentality of all the other members of his generation. And yet, Eliezer does not look for that. And Avraham Avinu doesn't send him to those communities. Because worshiping and following HaKadosh Baruch Hu is secondary to what's far more important. What's more important is, does a person have good and valuable midos, good character traits? Yes, if you go out, anyone here engaged? Not yet. Okay. As I said in the last class, maybe next semester when I ask that, it will be a different answer. I don't know. In the right time. It should be easy. But when you have the opportunity to date someone, and you're looking at what are the most important values and character traits in that person, think about how they're going to treat you. Think about how they're going to treat your children. Think about how they're going to treat community members. Think about how much emphasis they're going to put on being sensitive to other people's needs. Because that's what's most important. How much or how little they're going to learn is secondary. Of course, it's wonderful to have somebody who has everything. Most people don't have everything. Most people have plenty of deficiencies, and they're going to be lacking somewhere. And you have to make a decision. We all know that we're not perfect, and certainly the person we marry is going to be less perfect than us, because in our minds, we're all perfect, right? So that person's going to have all kinds of idiosyncrasies that are going to bother us. And the question, when trying to identify the appropriate person to marry, is, what am I willing to live with? And what do you say is just secondary? What is primary that absolutely has to be there? And you draw a red line and you say, without this, I will not get married to this person. It doesn't matter. It's just not worth it. And here in this week's parasha, we learn what the most valuable priority is all about. And that is not Yiras Shamayim. That is not how much Torah a person studies. It's not how impressive their resume looks in how many awards they've won and how many scholastics they've been involved with. It's to think about, how are they going to treat me? and other people? How sensitive are they going to be in the way they interact with others? The Ma'bid writes in the Sefer Beis Elokim, the Ma'bid was one of the great Gedolim in the 1500s, and he lived in Tzfat together with his great friend. Anybody know who else lived in Tzfat in the 1500s? Rabbi Yosef Karo. Very good. Actually, just said in the last class, I asked a question about Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. I said maybe next semester we should have a class in Jewish history, just like a little bit about when people lived and what's going on and when the Churban was and when the Rishonim lived and when Rabbi Yosef Karo and all the Achronim lived. But okay, for another time. So the Ma'bid writes in the Sefer Beis Elokim that it's interesting. When you look at the Luchos and you think about, it must have been very lopsided. It was asymmetrical. Why? Because what is on the second half of the Luchos? Lo Sinov, Lo Signov, right? All of that is very cryptic, very short. What's in the first half of the Luchos? Kabidis Adicha Vesimecha Leman Erichin Yemecha Al HaAdam Asher Hashem HaKechon Osinach, right? No, that's on the second side, right? What is that? That's the fifth. That's on the first, right? And you think about Shabbos. Zechar Yom HaShabbos the Kachur. How's that going to fit versus Lo Sirtzach or Lo Sinov? So the Ma'bid writes about this and he says, Kidei, why was it this way? Kidei sheye nikra v'nira yoser. HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliberately did it this way. He designed it this way for a very particular reason. Why? Because he wanted that the second half of the Luchos should be much larger font than the first half. Why? When you look at the Luchos, there's something that's going to jump out at you. And what is that going to be? Lo Sirtzach, Lo Sinov, Lo Signov. Treat other people respectfully. Ah, Yanochi Hashem Elokecha. Believe in God is the tiny print? That's the footnote? The answer says the Ma'bid is yes, that's the footnote. Anochi Hashem Elokecha is secondary to Lo Sinov and Lo Signov and Lo Sana Bereacha Yitzhaker and treating other people respectfully. Yes, indeed. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yibacha Elohim Acherim. As much as Avodah Zarah is a terrible thing, we understand that all of this is far more important. Let's read the Ma'bid together. Kidei Sheyeh Nikra V'Nira Yoser. In order that it should be evident, unmistakable, completely pronounced to everyone who saw Masha Hizharnu Beinenu Leveinenu, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us about interpersonal relationships. Sheyetzer HaAdam Rami Ne'urav L'Ta'avasam Mimashu Beinenu Lebein Yisbarach Sheina Yetzer Mekatra Galav Kalkach. It is a much greater challenge, he says, for a person to know how to treat and interact other human beings. It's a greater challenge than it is to figure out how to deal with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam, you figure it out. Dealing with other people is so much more difficult, it's so much harder. And therefore says the Ma'bid, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to make sure that this is more bolet, that this is more prominent, that this is more obvious. Because in our lives as Jews, that needs to be more obvious. Not to the exclusion of Yiras Shamayim, but it's something that may not come as easily. And it's something that we all need to focus on. It's interesting that when the Torah describes different kinds of animals that are acceptable to be brought as a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Torah has a whole list of issues that will disqualify an animal as being brought for a carbon. So the Torah says there, one of them is called Sarua. Sin, Resh, Vav, Ayin. Sarua. What exactly is the prohibition of Sarua? So the Torah tells us that if you have an animal that has different limbs that grow at different paces, and they're not symmetrical to each other, so you have one arm or one leg that is sticking out further than the other, that is something that cannot be brought as a carbon into the on the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash. So one of the Talmidim of Rav Moshe Feinstein said that Sarua is also a disqualifier for a Jew. You can't have one limb that's just sticking out stronger than the other. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants all of us to have a balance between all of these different aspects of our lives. I once read an amazing story, Rabbi Frand has the story, where he writes about the Rosh Hashiva and Tells in Cleveland, who was a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Rav Matal Katz. He was once on a plane, he was traveling somewhere, and somebody turns to him and he says, "Are you a rabbi?" He says, "Yes." He says, "I got a question for you." So whenever somebody asks me if I'm a rabbi, I think the answer you have to say is no. Because the next question is, you have to answer for the entire Jewish people. And I think it's easier to just say, "No, I'm not a rabbi, I don't know." So basically, he turns to him and he says, "Are you a rabbi?" He says, "Yes." He says, "I have a question, I don't understand. What's with all those religious Jews who cheat on their income taxes? Like, I don't understand it. I open the newspaper, I see it all the time. Man wearing those skull caps, the yarmulkes. I don't understand, how could it be? Cheating on their income taxes? Like, doesn't God want you to live other, you know, a different kind of life?" So Rav Matal Katz explained to him, and he said, "You know, it's a really good question. I've been wondering for a long time a different question. Should I tell you what it is?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "You ever heard of Yom Kippur?" So, "Yeah, of course, it's the holiest day of the year." And do you know what we do on Yom Kippur? He says, yeah, we don't eat, we don't drink, all kinds of different things. We pray. He says, I've been wondering for the longest time, why is it that we have all these religious Jews that are eating on Yom Kippur and they drive to shul on Shabbos? You know what Shabbat is? So yeah, I know what Shabbos is. You know, Orthodox Jews don't drive to shul on Shabbos, but we have all kinds of religious Jews that drive to shul on Shabbos and who eat on Yom Kippur. Like, how do you explain that? The man turns back to me and says, well, clearly those people are not religious. I mean, come on. They're driving to shul on Shabbos and eating on Yom Kippur. They're not Orthodox. He says, well, neither are these. Neither are these. Why does driving to shul or eating on Yom Kippur make you less Orthodox than somebody who cheats on their income taxes? It's the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who asked us to treat other people respectfully and to respect their property and to understand that we have a responsibility toward all of humanity who we interact with. That's the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu that also said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu that said, don't cheat on your income taxes, that said that we shouldn't eat on Yom Kippur and we shouldn't drive on Shabbos. And I think that that was a very powerful response. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was the father of the Musar movement, and he said one of his Talmidim used to go with him to bake matzah every year. But this Talmud now took a position in a different community, and he was moving away. And he went to his Rebbe before he left, and he said, you know, this year I'm going to have to bake the matzah myself. I know that you have all kinds of hidurim and all kinds of specifications of exactly how you bake the matzah, but this year I'm not going to be here, so maybe you can share with me what are the most important hidurim when I'm going to bake my matzah in my own community? What would you say I should look out for? And he said, I think the most important hidur is, you know, we have a bunch of almanos who come to the matzah factory to sweep the floor after you're done making your mess. You should bend down on the floor and help her sweep up the garbage. That's the biggest hidur in the matzah. It's not about how many minutes your matzah is going to be baked and how hot the oven is and did you get it in time. That's secondary. Not that we should make light of any of that, but he said that's secondary, because that is secondary. There's an amazing story told about Rabbi Aryeh Levin. Rabbi Aryeh Levin was tzaddik in our times. If you never read the book, you should. It's an amazing book. I actually read it in Hebrew. It's by Simcha Raz. Same book as in Hebrew and in English. It's a great book. So in that, I don't know if it's in that book or someone else, somewhere else, they tell the story that you ever been to Yerushalayim during Sukkot time and they have these Dalet Minim Shuk and people are coming and they're showing up with their telescopes and microscopes and I don't know what they're looking for. And they're standing there for hours looking for an esrog that they want to buy and how much does it cost and negotiating the whole thing. So Rabbi Levine comes on Erev Sukkos, walks into the first shop that he finds, asks them for an esrog for X amount of dollars, doesn't even look at it, takes it from the seller, goes on his way, puts it in his bag, and he runs out. So one of the Talmidim was following him and he said, I don't understand. Look at everybody. They're spending so much time finding an esrog, trying to find the perfect one exactly the way it's supposed to be. And you run into the store. You don't even look at it. You trust the guy who's selling it to you, you just throw it in your bag and you go on your way? He said, yes. He said, there are two times in the Torah where we have the idea of hidur. One is by the mitzvah of Dalet Minim, where we're told, V'lakachtam lachem pri'eitz hadar kapos tamarim, supposed to take a beautiful esrog. And that's what everybody's focused on. There's another place where we find that, and that is V'hadarta p'nei zakein. We should respect our elders. He said, Erev Sukkos, I spend my time working on V'hadarta p'nei zakein. I'm on my way to the nursing home now to visit all the elderly people who are not going to be able to experience a Yom Tov the way I am. And he said, I don't think that the first hiddur is any more important than the second. I think the second one takes precedence to the first. And that was Rabbi Aryeh Levin. And that is so much the message that we take from what it is that Avraham Avinu imparts to Eliezer on his way looking for a shidduch. And it's something important for all of us to learn, not only in shidduchim, but in everything in our lives. That we always have conflicting and competing values. We always have things that we need to focus on, and we can't focus on everything at the same time. But if we're going to work on something, though it's extremely difficult to do so, the Ramchal tells us, most importantly is to work on the Choli HaNefesh. And it's very hard to change, but the Chafetz Chaim says, as we mentioned, think about it this way. If somebody has a cancerous growth, they get down to the bottom of it, no matter how difficult it's going to be. You have that surgery. You take care of what needs to be taken care of, even if the recovery is going to be months and years long. Even if there won't be a recovery. But we need to get rid of that as to make sure that we're not going to infect the rest of the body. And so too, says the Chafetz Chaim, is the way we need to look at Choli HaNefesh as well. A person who doesn't have Yirah Shamayim can always learn. A person who has no Midos, a person who doesn't really understand what life of sensitivity is all about, what life of meaning and understanding and purpose and being kind and generous to others is all about, is really lacking. And it's something that will not be fixed later on. It's something that we really need to be mindful of. So I thought that was a very, very powerful and important lesson for all of us to take away. Yes, you had a